Coming up on KUCB News, seismic monitoring at Chisholdin Volcano has resumed, and the Biden administration has announced the members of their new Environmental Justice Advisory Council. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Wednesday, April 7th, 2021. The Alaska Volcano Observatory has raised the alert level at Chisholdin Volcano back to normal. The AVO said in a statement that several seismic stations at the Eastern Aleutian Volcano are now operating after being offline for several months this winter. Scientists are closely monitoring Chisholdin, located about 60 miles southwest of Cold Bay in the center of Unimak Island, using local seismic, GPS and tilt stations, web camera imagery, remote infrasound and lightning networks, and satellite images. Chisholdin is one of the most active volcanoes in the Aleutian Volcanic Arc, with at least 54 episodes of unrest, including over 24 confirmed eruptions since 1775. Most eruptions are relatively small, although an eruption in 1999 generated an ash cloud that reached 45,000 feet above sea level. Last week, the Biden administration announced the members of the new White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. The Advisory Council will provide advice and recommendations on how to address current and historic environmental injustices across the United States. Savunga's Viola Vaiwaghi is one of the 26 members chosen by President Biden and Vice President Harris.
It is an honor, not only as Sivokok, you big grandmother, and Native Village Sibungo tribal citizen, but as an Arctic Indigenous person who has been working on environmental health and justice issues going on 19 years.
As the Environmental Health and Justice Program Director at Alaska Community Action on Toxics, Waghi has advocated for environmental health on her native St. Lawrence Island. Since the end of the Cold War, her tribal community has been trying to hold the U.S. military accountable for toxic contamination resulting from two Cold War bases. This is one way she will exercise her voice.
Make sure that the priorities, including military toxic contamination and the persistent organic pollutants, are at the forefront with this administration. These have resulted in health disparities never seen before in our people.
Persistent organic pollutants, or POPs, have contaminated the food supply for subsistence diets. St. Lawrence Islanders are experiencing a range of related health issues, including cancer, due to POP contamination.
Even though we don't have manufacturers or chemical plants, we're finding them in our backyards, in our lands and waters, and in our bodies, and in our most sacred, our traditional foods that have sustained our people for millennia.
According to Waghi, the Yupik people still feel the benefits of maintaining their traditional diet outweigh the risks. Her appointment confirms the federal government's growing geopolitical interest in the Arctic, while different branches of the U.S. military have announced plans for operating once again in Alaska and the Arctic. Waghi recognizes that a seat at the table in Washington is timely and important.
It is so important. Because a lot of times we are never at the table when decisions are being made for us miles and miles away. This will ensure that we have a voice at the White House.
The council was established to confront long-standing environmental injustices and to ensure that historically marginalized and polluted, overburdened communities have greater input on federal policies and decisions. As the Alaska legislature moves deeper into its session, the state budget is taking shape. It looks like most of Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposal will pass, but there are some important potential changes, and the amount of this year's permanent fund dividend is not yet clear. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman spoke to Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove about where the legislature is at in the budget process.
Lawmakers are done with the first step in the process. The House Budget Subcommittee has finished their work. They're behind where they normally would be. That's because the House took a month to organize. The House subcommittee's work can be important because it's the first time we see lawmakers react to what the governor proposed. And it's sometimes the case that the changes they make will remain in the budget all the way through to when it gets to the governor's desk.
Andrew, the legislature and Governor Dunleavy haven't exactly always seen eye to eye. Are we seeing big changes to the budget coming?
Not really, but that hasn't happened either last year or this year. Neither year did we see Dunleavy propose the kind of cuts that he'd proposed when he first became governor. Those proposals contributed to the recall campaign against him. One area where House members haven't agreed with the administration so far is a proposal that would shift the cost of prosecuting misdemeanor crimes in some municipalities from the state to city and borough governments. Home rule municipalities have the authority to write their own misdemeanor laws. Anchorage and Juneau have, so they're already paying for their own prosecutors. And the North Slope borough pays the state, but other municipalities aren't. John Skidmore heads criminal prosecutions for the state. He recently explained why the administration proposed this. He refers to a line from Spider-Man.
With great power comes great responsibility. They have the power to do this for their citizens, and the argument then is that there is some responsibility that would go along with it.
But the proposal raised concerns with municipalities. Seward's acting police chief, Alan Nickel, told lawmakers in March that his city already has a large deficit.
In a time where everyone is hurting for money following the pandemic, this is not the time to make it harder for anyone.
And the House members seem to agree with him. They voted to restore the state funding. It's more than $1 million.
Okay, that's one change House members are making to the governor's proposed budget. What about any other big changes?
One that is noteworthy is the $1 million lawmakers added for the redistricting board. It will draw the map that will determine who controls the legislature for the next decade. This additional funding shows how high the stakes are and that the board will be working later than normal this year. It won't draw the map until the fall. That's because the census numbers are being delayed by the pandemic. And the board will almost certainly have to pay to defend itself against lawsuits. There generally will be lawsuits over whatever map it comes up with.
Andrew, where do permanent fund dividends fit into this, and what's next for the budget?
Well, what's next is it's in the House Finance Committee now, and that committee is planning to hold public testimony on the budget on Thursday and Friday afternoons, and Saturday morning to afternoon. Then it's on to the House floor and then the Senate. That's almost certainly going to take the budget well past the 90-day session length, and it would take it close to the deadline to end the session, which is on May 19th. One big thing the House subcommittees didn't deal with, and that's the size of permanent fund dividends, and whether to draw more than planned from the permanent fund's earnings to pay for the dividends. So that will be a big focus of the debate from here on out. Also, the state's going to have to start to decide how to spend the $1 billion that it's getting from the American Rescue Plan Act. And that process likely won't even start until May.
That was KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman speaking with Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove. Veterinarian Dr. Caldwell and his staff will be back in Unalaska starting on Saturday. This will be the second time since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic that he's made the trip to the island. Travel restrictions, costs, and the pandemic have made it difficult for Caldwell and his team to make the trip to provide animal medical services, according to a statement. The clinic will take place at the Unalaska United Methodist Church from April 10th to 16th. Church programs and services will pause for a week, and the church will not be taking donations over the course of the vet clinic. If you would like to make an appointment, call or text 359-1876. Again, that's 359-1876. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Thank you.
Thank you.